Hey, this is comics writer Kyle Higgins, and you've jumped inside the Pullbag, only on the Geekcast Radio Network.
You've just jumped inside the Pullbag. Join TFG1 Mike and the rest of the comic crew here at the GCRN as they make their great escape into comics. From DC, Marvel, and Image to IDW, Boom Studios, and Zenoscope, we have everything right here. We cover things like Transformers, He-Man, superheroes, TMNT, and Radiant Black. Yeah, we have all that and so much more. It's all inside the Pullbag here on the Geekcast Radio Network. So, without further ado, it's time to talk about the comics we're reading right now, here inside the Pullbag.
Don't touch that remote. I know it's heartbreaking to have your favorite shows preempted, but look what you're getting instead.
Hello and welcome to The Pullbag. This is episode 505. Ladies and gentlemen, it is January 2023. The holidays are over, and it's time for a whole new year of comics. And The Pullbag is going to be kicking off the year with an Origins in Comic reading with my buddy Joe from Joe Loves Comics. Hello, Joe. How are you?
Hey man, I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me. It's very exciting to be here. I caught up on the Radiant Black podcast, Comic Origins, when you shared them in the Discord, so it's exciting to have my own one here.
Very cool, very cool. All right, so did you grow up reading comics, and at what age do you first remember reading or noticing comics?
So, this is a bit of an interesting one, in terms of I didn't really grew up reading comics in the sort of sense that I tend to think of. I was sort of into other things. I was quite into like Nintendo Wii, and saw the 3DS, the DS, those sorts of things. And then it was actually around the Flash TV show on the CW that was a couple of seasons in, and I got into that. And then that Christmas, my mom was like, "Oh, you should ask for some like Flash comics for Christmas." It seemed like an obvious thing to her, but I hadn't really thought about it. And then that was sort of like the gateway into everything. It must have been what, like 2016, 2017, so only like 13, 14. So I'm still might be quite young compared to some people in the community.
Yeah, it's funny. I did an episode last year with a guy, and he's in his 60s or 70s, so he has like 60, 70, 80 years of whatever it is, you know. So, all right, very cool, very cool. So, was there a parent, a friend, you know, like you said, your mom kind of, you know, steered you towards comics, but was there somebody specific in your life that was like, "Here, kid, read this comic, go away, you bother me"?
There was definitely an interesting route in that sense, where so I started out buying those like Flash trades, the Flash New 52 trades.
Right.
I just sort of like bought them with Amazon. Once I'd read one of them, eventually, well, so it took me a while to read that first volume. I sort of just got it and I was like, "Oh, that's neat," and then I put it away for a while. And I think once came a point where I was like, "No, actually, I do want to read more," and so I bought more and more. And then once I sort of started getting into it, I found out my uncle was into comics. And so eventually there were quite a few times over the next few years from that point where he would just offload various like sets of comics on me. And I remember it was Chip Zdarsky's Peter Parker's Spectacular Spider-Man. There was like a bunch of issues of that he just sort of gave to me. And up to that point, because hearing the like news agents and things, we can get like in the UK, we get like magazine reprints. I don't know if they do them anymore actually, because that was many years ago, but they would have like three or four stories in one. So it was always quite a weird experience to be like, "Oh, this is only one story. I bet I can read this in like 5 seconds." And then obviously, no, it took me like, I was like, "Oh, this is actually pretty substantially sized."
Yeah, those old jumbo comics, when they were doing, like you said, magazine style, they would put it, it's like reading a Batman book now, whichever writer you want to read, where it's like, "Oh, here's 18 to 24 pages of a Batman story, and then here's like 5 pages of a backup story," kind of thing. But back in those days, it was like, "Here, you're going to get 3 full stories in one magazine for one whatever price. I don't want to say low price because they. I don't remember what the prices were on those old books, but yeah, very cool, very cool. So, which, you know, compared to now versus when you were a kid, as a kid, you know, when you were younger, which characters were your favorites?
Well, so I'm sure, like most people, Spider-Man is an obvious one to go for. Mm-hmm. Even when I sort of wasn't really into comics, I remember just sort of occasionally noticing the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon on Disney XD. I remember that just being on. And just sort of like absorbing it, but not really, it didn't really sort of spark any sort of interest to sort of pursue anything else. It was just sort of like, oh, that's neat. And then the Flash, that like I've mentioned already, that classic Flash run from the New 52, it holds a bit of a special place in my heart just because of what it means. But I'm not sure by this point if the Flash is one of my favorite heroes, but he is sort of very cool. He has quite a cool sort of aesthetic and design about him. So,
all right, so which Flash? There have been multiples. Which Flash is your Flash?
Well, so it's interesting because, of course, the New 52 and Rebirth runs, mm-hmm. which I sort of got into, were Barry, and of course, with the TV show, so that was all Barry. And then more recently, been catching up on reading the current one by Jeremy Adams of Wally West. Mm-hmm. So it's quite cool to have that sort of experience with the kids and Linda and everything. That's quite a nice dynamic. There was also more recently with Future State and sort of like the Multiversity Teen Justice series that ran recently, those sorts of things with Jess Quick, the Kid Quick or something like that.
I haven't read it, but I know what you're talking about.
I think I mixed the code name and the real name there for a second, but yeah, they've got Impulse is always fun. I still need to read that classic Peter David run from the 90s, but mm-hmm. I always think Impulse has a cool design. There's so many, isn't there?
Yeah. Very cool, very cool. All right, the age-old question, DC or Marvel?
I think overall DC, quite honestly, because there's a lot of cool stuff at Marvel, especially with like the MCU and what they've been able to showcase. But I remember watching Black Adam when that came out and thinking like, yeah, this is really cool. Like if DC played it right, they could actually... I think I'm quite sort of more invested in so like the DC universe and as a whole, whereas I'm probably more likely to read a DC event than a Marvel event, I would say, maybe.
Yeah.
But of course, there are still like a few like exceptions and characters from Marvel that I do sort of love and have like a affinity for.
Very cool, very cool. What other publishers do you enjoy reading?
So, over the past sort of couple of years, I've gotten really into Image and Boom and that sort of indie side of things. I still need to delve further into things. Like when that was coming out, there was things like Minor Threats from Dark Horse Comics and Erratic from AWA. Those are sort of me trying to venture further into. But then especially with things like Something is King of the Children from Boom Studios, that's like a classic. Modern classic that's going on. Once in the Future, I need to catch up on that because that ended, but I read some of that and that was really good. There's just sort of so many different Image titles from like a variety of genres as well, and just so good and such like joys to read outside of the traditional sort of Marvel and DC superhero content.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Image is, they've always done interesting stuff, no matter what it is. But they are, with this whole initiative they have with the Massiverse, they are just killing it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's so expensive. And
you said expansive, not expensive, right? You said expansive, not expensive, right? I just want to make sure you're not.
Yeah, I mean.
It is both things, but I just want to make sure I get the right meaning.
It could be both.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But no,
I mean, I definitely said expensive. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No. No problem. But yeah, no, Image, man. They're just with what they're doing with what, and I love the way that it's being done. That it's not like they're not out just to rip off the big two, or they're like they're out to create their own. Like you read Radiant Black, you read Radiant Red, you read Radiant Pink, you read Rogue Sun, you read. I don't think by the time this actually airs, Massiverse Part Two or whatever the big whatever the set. I don't think that'll be out. Yeah, Supermassive. I don't think the second Supermassive will be out in January of 2023. But my point is that with the Massiverse that they're creating, it's like, holy crap, this is something that anyone can get into. Like you start with Radiant. Yeah, you start with like, and you don't have, okay, you have maybe 1 or 2 years, but 1 or 2 years is compared to 90 years of Batman. Here you go. Start it up, you know? So yeah, it is what it
and
is.
Even, yeah. And that's something that it's always quite cool about some, I guess maybe flagship is the word you would use, some Image titles where even things like Saga, which has been going on for over 10 years now, mm-hmm. it's like a big compendium of the first sort of 50 issues or so to catch up on that. So even the ones that do have like long-running histories are still very accessible and widely available.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying they're not, but, you know, the standard trope is, oh, Marvel and DC, they've been around since 38 and 39, et cetera, you know, 1938 and 1939, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's over 80 years of, holy shit, where do we start? So, you know, whereas the Massiverse and what Image and Kyle and Michael and all the artists, everybody is doing, all the writers – they are crafting something that is wholly their own and it is accessible. Like if you like superhero stuff, you're going to like it. If you like tech stuff, you're going to like it. If you're a sound guy, Doppler's your villain or whatever. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't really matter where you are in your comics, whether you're brand new or whether you're, you know, an old fogey like me, you can start with this starting point of Radiant Black number one and just keep reading the story as it grows. And by the time we're all, but at least anyone my age or older, by the time we're all dead and gone, you young kids will have something in your own 40s, 50s, and 60s. Back in my day, we were just starting out. And yeah. So, you know, it is what
it is. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Sorry. No, I was just going to say, yeah, I'm sort of just agreeing with you. I think it is like an interesting point to make that especially these days when there's sort of like on the physical side, there's so many different collections being printed. There's so many different ways to read things, whether that's in like the single issues or there's so many like trades and hardcovers and being printed. And that's not even mentioning the digital side of things.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of that, print or digital, which one, both, either or, and why or why not?
So, another sort of interesting question where for a long time, I didn't really get the appeal of digital, but that was admittedly because I only had my phone and I was like, it was a bit awkward trying to read things on a laptop. So, I was always much more into the idea of like physical comics, like having it in your hand. And then when over the last couple of years, I got like a tablet to not just read comics on, but just to like watch stuff on and do other things. I sort of, and as that sort of coincided with reviewing things for like the Wednesday Pool blog and getting those PDF copies and being able to like read those and then being like, oh yeah, I can actually see the appeal of this now because this is actually like it's a good experience. I still prefer print, but like if I had to, it's not too bad. It'd be okay.
Yeah. for me, and I know, folks, I understand it's now 2023. We're in a new year of comics and everything else, but I'm sorry. I still will always go back to the fact that Amazon done fucked up Comixology. I was reading Comixology on my PC, on my monitors, for years. It was fine reading it on a computer because Comixology knew how to do it. And then Amazon comes in and screws it up where I can only read it on my phone now. And that's fine. It is what it is. But for me, when I read comics, I read digitally to get the story. But I like having the physical print copy to, like, ooh, that's the art. That's amazing. Like, but to get the actual, like, Nightwing goes over to Lockport and kicks Radiant Black's ass or whatever, you know, doesn't matter. Whatever the story is, like, that is what helped me with my visual impairments, was the guided view and all that stuff that Comixology was doing. And now the website's like, whatever. But that, I get on that rant all the time, and I probably shouldn't.
I mean, yeah, it is a very valid problem with what they did to, because like you say, if it was fine, like, people should have the option to, like, read however they want, and
yep,
it's just, all is, like, it was messed up.
All is Amazon needed to do, and I say this every time, all is they needed to do was put an Amazon.com/ like, still have the same website. All they had to do was change the linking, or if they wanted to put their, you know, their own branding on it, all they had to do was attach an image or use an NFT or a GIF or a GIF or what. All they had to do was rebrand it. They didn't have to completely destroy the website and put it into Kindle. Nobody reads comics on well, people have to do it now, but anyway. All right. Who are some of your favorite comics writers and why?
Oh, see, another great question. Most of the time, or I should say, some of the ones that sort of immediately come to mind are people like Scott Snyder, James Tynion Ivey, Chip Zdarsky, Tom Taylor. More recently, I've been getting into a lot of Rick Remender stuff I've been meaning to read for a while, because at the time this has been recorded, the 7 to Eternity hardcover came out a couple of months ago, and then over the summer I also bought the first Deadly Class hardcover and the first few volumes of Black Science a couple of months ago, so I've sort of had like a bit of a surge of Rick Remender stuff, which has been quite cool to get into. Of course, like, people like Carl Higgins with all the Radiant Black stuff. There's so many different writers putting out some, like, great work. I quite like what Scott Snyder did. I got into him with his Justice League run,
okay,
which I really enjoyed, and then into Death Metal, was the art by Capullo and sorry, yeah, are you going to?
No, good.
And then all these sort of Comixology titles that have been going on. I haven't read any of the second wave yet, but the sort of the first few books were things like Night of the Ghoul, We Have Demons, which have both been released by Dark Horse, and then also Claire, my favourite of the three, with Francis Manipal. That was a really great read. So lots of great work going out.
Snyder's Death Metal stuff, it was... I haven't read it, so I'm not going to form an opinion on something I haven't read. But the reason why I'm saying this is because, for me, it was collected weird, or it was published. Like, they did, like, Death Metal 1, 2, 3, 4, and then Death Metal... I don't know. I got to go back and look at that stuff and see if I can get, like, a full-on trade paperback of the whole thing, or if it's multiple volumes, that's fine. But originally, when it was coming out, I was like, how am I supposed to follow this?
Yeah, it was weird because I think, like you say, between the fourth and fifth issue, they did a skip month, but it wasn't like a proper skip month, because in lieu of a single issue, they had like three one-shots come out, which then led into the following issue. And so, because I think like the two of them were like side stories or things that were being used in the final like act, and then only one of them was actually leading into it. It was confusing. I know what you mean. There's, especially when, like, if someone had that on their pull list, and then you just have to maybe like either specifically ask for them, or I guess they would have just had to have hoped that the shop would like put everything death metal in there. It's a mess when like publishers like split things up into one shots and break up the. I know what you mean.
Yeah, and I mean it's very simple to just. I mean, if you're going to break it up, that's fine. But if you're going to do it as a trade paperback, make sure you have it in story order, obviously, and then just put it as the trades. So we can, like, IDW does their Transformers stuff. It'll be Transformers Volume 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, whatever it is. Like, it'll be, you know, each thing. Or, I don't know. So I do eventually want to read death metal. I have a whole plan for stuff here in 2023, folks, that we're going to be getting to and everything else. And here's hoping the plan works out, but that's a whole other story. Speaking of story, what defines a good story to you?
So there is something I noticed recently. I say recently, it's over the last sort of year or two, as I've gotten into more those Image and Indie titles where I quite like, I love when the story is very wild and outlandish. It sort of goes out there, but it's still very sort of grounded and emotional in the characters. And to some people, that's not for everyone. Some people, it gets too wild, and I totally get that. It might seem too over the top, but there's just like a really cool juxtaposition there, I always find, where the story is just absolutely going crazy. There's some sort of like weird, like wacky shenanigans. But I'm still like invested in like these two like singular characters. It's like, well, I just want to know like how they survived the collapse of the multiverse that's being folded in on itself. But it's like, but how are they also going to solve their like interpersonal problems? And I just always think that's a really fun balance that some writers can now. And it's sort of partly in a way that, and sometimes makes me love writers like Scott Snyder's work more, when he sort of talked about what work means to him, where you take something like death metal, like we mentioned, which is still very like wild, and it's like, oh, this can't possibly have any deeper meaning out there. And then he'll talk about it and be like, oh, well, this is like symbolizing about like hope. And it's like, oh, this is like so cool to me that, I just have, and it's like, it adds a deeper meaning, but it's still fun and heartfelt, and yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, as long as the story hits you in whatever way it's going to hit you, it's either going to smack you in the face or it's going to leave you wanting more. And sometimes leaving the reader wanting more is a good thing. That way you come back to the next, especially in single issue, that way you come back to the next thing. But it's like, sometimes it's like, holy crap, I kind of got lost on Radiant Black. Like, I've read up to, well, again, folks, by as of this recording, they just released issue 19. I'm caught up, but man, between 9 and 11, I was so, issue 10 of Radiant Black is just an acid trip that nobody wants to, I mean, go on that acid trip, but like, seriously, reading the Blacklight issue of Radiant Black, it's like, holy, I was so lost. And, you know, does that mean I like Radiant Black anything less than I already did? No, I don't dislike it because I got lost and I didn't know what the hell was going on. That's why you reread something, so you figure it out. Like, oh, that's what Kyle meant, even though we still don't know what the hell it all is supposed to mean.
We have no idea what that book is.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we don't know what it is yet.
Oh, man. Right. Yeah. Yeah, that whole sort of second arc was such like a wild roller coaster ride, because we were left, of course, with like the way the first sort of arc leaves off, and that sort of cliffhanger.
Yep.
And then I just feel like that second arc was sort of quite intense. There's lots of like action and the way it sort of ends quite like intensely, and yeah, it's wild.
Yeah. And then with his with the way that Kyle does his breakups of the arcs, and like issue six is a character thing. Issue 12 is a character thing. And I like that. I like that he does that. I like that he gives us that breather between the story arcs to catch up on characters we've met within those story arcs.
It just expands the whole universe and like everyone in it.
Yeah, absolutely. I said on Radiant Black podcast episode 37, I said, first time I have ever read a comic where I did not mind the time jumps is when we read Wendell's story. Because I said in that episode with Bash and Matt, I said, guys, I cannot do time jumps because a lot of the comics that I've read with time jumps, it's three different artists. It's the main artist in the present, it's a different artist in the past, and it's a different artist in the future. So it's three different art styles in one book, and it's like, holy crap, this is hurting my head. But with Wendell's story and how it was told and how the art style is, it's like, oh, this works. I like this. Keep doing this with this character. That's amazing. That's great.
I remember there was an issue with Paper Girls, because when the show came out, I picked up the like complete story, the whole, it was a paperback of like the whole thing, and there was an issue of that that they told where it was like they were like I'm not trying to spoil it, but there was sort of like four different storylines taking place at the same time.
Right,
in like a similar way to that issue. So I think it's quite a cool sort of concept. Of just if you can like put it off effectively, it can be quite cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it can work. It's just most of the time I have never felt like it did for me until we got to Wendell's story with issue 19. So, all right, you have a new number one in your hand, and it's left you wanting more. So what does a story have to keep you coming back? What does it have to draw you in?
I think, for me, each issue has to be a mostly like complete and satisfying issue. I always wanted to say like it has to be a complete story, but that's not technically true, because I think I'm tend to be more wary of picking up miniseries than ongoing series, because sometimes I feel like with the pacing of miniseries, it can feel like an original graphic novel that's just sort of being split up into arbitrarily into issues, and then sometimes like it feels a bit unsatisfying. So I like to have each issue sort of has to be like compelling and interesting in its own right, and also setting up things to come rather than sort of like reading like individual chapters of things like over many months. I need to feel, because there have been times when I sort of it's been like good, but I like to sort of drop it and like pick it up later because it's not quite capturing me month to month. I like to, some of the best issue ones that I've read have sort of given me quite a complete and satisfying sort of overview at first of like the characters and like the general world. Sort of like really like sort of like grab my imagination. They don't necessarily have to show too much of what the ongoing story is going to be like, but as long as there's sort of like enough of sort of like the base elements to sort of keep me coming back month to month, and like as you want to read it month to month rather than just like in a collection or later on in whatever, then I think that's the main thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Who are some of your favorite comics artists?
Oh, man. I mean, Jorge Jimenez has been killing it on Zdarsky's Batman. I mean, he was the one sort of immediately come to mind because I've been loving that. Man, I imagine it'd be over by the time this goes out. But Francis Manapul was the other one that comes to mind. So he did the first half of New 52 Flash with Brian Ricciardo. That's how you pronounce it, but his sort of art style is like, he also did Clear of Scott Snyder, I mentioned, it's all comes back. And it's so like gorgeous, and it's sort of like a smooth sort of pastel-y. It's just, it feels, I really like some of the more unique styles. There are some artists that are very good in the sense that it looks good. People like Jorge Jimenez, like I mentioned, and Dan Mora, and those sorts of artists. But then there's other ones like Riley Rosmo, who I know is slightly unpopular for some people, who's doing Tim Drake Robin. I quite like his art, how unique it is. Right. I think, yeah, there's sort of like a wide variety of different artists. As long as it's sort of, I like it when it's sort of like bright and like vibrant and like it really sort of like pops. And sometimes, yeah, like if the colouring isn't really there, that can sort of change how you look at it. But
yeah, it depends on what the drawn lines are, and then what the colorist brings to the piece. And sometimes you like dark, sometimes you're gonna like bright, and you know, it is what it is. And it's just one of those things that is so cool because there are so many art. I mean, like I've said, we have almost 90 years of comic books.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have, to the point of so many artists in that time that have made their mark on the industry, you had, just like with stories, you have so many choices to go to, and some art we like, some art we don't.
Mm.
And the key in expressing something that you don't like about the art is that you talk about the art itself and what the artist is doing, not in like, oh my God, his art is, don't do that. Don't sit there and insult the person.
Exactly.
Talk about the art itself kind of thing. Do you have go ahead. Sorry.
So, just a few more that came to mind that I finally thought of. People like, Jim Chung on the Young Avengers work, which I read a couple of years ago. That was really good. Oh, Ryan Stegman on the... Did you ever read that Venom run of Donny Cates? And that was really good.
I think I have it in my wish list. I know of it, and I know that Ryan Stegman is Mr. Venom Boy and everything else. And we've done some Venom things, but I honestly couldn't tell you.
Yeah, I mean, like Peach Momoko has put out some really beautiful things. I think, sort of just briefly, so what I was saying about the colorists, like Dan Mora and Tamara Bonvillain, there's some sort of colorists and artists that pair really well together. Like, their work is just gorgeous. And once in future, and then when they took that to World's Finest, it's such a treat.
Yeah, I first found Dan Mora. He was doing, I don't know if he was doing interior colors, but he was doing various covers for Boom Studios' WWE books. And I loved all of his, Boom Studios' WWE stuff that he did for the covers and stuff. Do you have a favorite non-superhero title?
My favorite book, just in general, is not technically superhero title, Alienated from Boom Studios, written by Simon Spurrier and Chris Wild Goose, Jim Campbell, and Andrew May, also on the creative team. That's a really good book, and that sort of goes back to what I was saying about it. Sort of gets escalates quite a lot as it goes through the issues, but I still really like how it focuses in on the characters.
Yeah.
Things like, of course, Saga, that's another one. Like the James Tynion books, like Department of Truth. And because, like, if anyone isn't reading Department of Truth and wants something a bit different, quite different, and that's something you definitely need to check out. It's such a mind-bending read.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but good things about that book.
I mean... Oh, yes. And you know, there was one I was forgetting. Homesick Pilots.
Okay.
That was a really interesting read. That it's sort of from Image Comics, so it might not be something that everyone's heard of, but the artwork was really vibrant, and it was by Dan Waters, Casper Wingard, and that was a really fun read. What's the Furthest Place From Here? So another one of those with, like, the long names, things like Something's Killing the Children, those sorts of there's lots of interesting. If you want to venture outside of the superhero realm, there's definitely lots of options for you to go with.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. What is your favorite run or story arc of a series? So a favorite run would be like Batman 1971 that runs from issue like 4 to 7 or something. But story arc could be any story arc that has an ending, beginning and ending.
The 2018 Justice League run that sort of keep mentioning Scott Snyder, but that was such a cool run that because it started I've been reading comics for a couple of years before it started in 2018, but that was sort of the year I really got into connecting like single issues, like going like week to week as like a Wednesday Warrior. And I remember just sort of collecting that month to month for like the whole like 39 issues or whatever. And it was just such a fun time, sort of like world superhero ideas. Yeah. And that had some great storylines within. Things like also Absolute Carnage and that Venom one I mentioned. That was a fantastic event. I really enjoyed that.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
What is one comic you can read over and over again, single issue or trade?
I think I've read Alienated, that I mentioned a bit ago. Mm-hmm. I've read that a couple of times, and I'll probably just read that more times because it's just sort of it's like short enough that it's quite easy to reread because it's only like a 6-issue single trade, so you can sort of reread it without taking up too much time. And I got the Young Avengers omnibus when that came out, the original run. So I'm quite excited to read that series again. And I think it is things like that, that sort of when they're releasing like omnibus of like the runs that I sort of already love, like the Venom, and when we hopefully eventually get like a Justice League. I think those would be the sorts of ones that I can sort of have in like a complete thing. Because it's not the same when you have to like put out like 39 issues or whatever. It's just to have it like all in one book.
Yeah,
you can just sort of flick through and like absorb, or maybe even just read like a favorite storyline. Or I think like accessibility plays a big part in like what you sort of reread. And
absolutely, that's one of the reasons why, for the most part, I've always loved the digital stuff because you're worried about space. And yeah. I never do omnibuses again. I don't care what story it is. I've told you may not have heard this, but I've told the listeners or listening to the sound of my voice know that I've been telling this story since 2014 or whatever. We were going to do our first Punisher month where we were going to cover various classic Punisher stories. And at that time, I was not on the digital stuff yet. I was still on the print. I was still getting weekly issues. I was still getting physical trades. Well, we were going to do Welcome Back, Frank. Welcome Back, Frank, in trade form, is 12 issues in one hardcover book or one softcover book, whichever it was at the time. Damn thing weighs at least 15.5 pounds. I fell asleep reading the book in my chair. The book fell out of my hand and crashed to the floor.
Oh my God.
It was not because of the content of the book that I fell asleep. It was because of the weight of the physical book. Yeah, the next day I signed up for Comixology and I had not looked back at all. Like, physical comics? Fuck them. Done. As far as reading for the story, you know, kind of thing. But yeah, no, those, oh man, those omnibuses, ooh, hey.
Yeah, there was some that, and also because it depends on the, like the paper they use, there was some of them were sort of like, maybe like thicker paper, but a shorter, or like the, maybe not to get technical, but like in terms of like the binding, some of like the DC and Marvel ones are like similar lengths, but are like so much like thicker or shorter because of the, where they have like flat or curved binding. I remember when I was sort of first getting into the omnibus, I had the Miles Morales omnibus. There's like Ultimate Universe stuff, And I remember I was just sort of like lying in bed, like reading it one day, like a few years ago, and I sort of just having to like sort of like rest it on my and my knees in bed, and mm-hmm. my mom was just sort of like looking at me. It's like that doesn't look like very comfortable. And then like so literally like for Christmas this year, that year, she gave me like a book stand thing to like rest them on, and it's been one of the most like useful presents that I've like ever gotten. I just use it all the time, especially for those omnibus things. It's incredibly handy.
Yeah, absolutely. So are there comics you avoid altogether? So you go into your local comic shop and you see, let's say, Radiant Black, Batman, Superman, Spider-Man, and then Larfleeze or whatever. Like, are there comics you just don't gravitate towards?
I definitely sort of gloss over lots of like the Star Wars stuff from Marvel. Like I sort of acknowledge it and I sort of like see it there, but I just don't sort of think much of it. My boyfriend's like a massive Star Wars fan, but I've sort of still not really got much into it. There are some writers that there's sort of certain runs that have sort of left a bit of a bad taste in my mouth that I should probably go and revisit it, because I sort of hear good things about their other stuff. It's like, well, no, they wrote this one thing that I didn't like. So, but yeah, so there are some. It depends. I think a lot of the time, unless they hear like awful things about it, unless it's like atrocious, I might give it a try. But then sometimes you've only got like limited money and limited time, so. Like a lot of the time, you just don't have the time and money to try something that you might not like, and that's not like to say that you shouldn't expand your horizons. Because it's not like an interesting balance between like trying new things and being like, well, this doesn't look like my thing. It's like I might try it eventually, but you need to sort of like get like a balance of like it's like I want to try this because it's new, but also I need to sort of try and like prioritize what I. What I sort of think I'm more likely to, I think after a few years you sort of start to sort of know and learn your tastes, and especially when sort of like in a community when you have like friends with similar tastes or different tastes, and you can sort of work out what you think you might like from that. I think it's just it all just sort of like depends, and you have to sort of learn.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's just one of those things where. It just depends on what it is. And when I say avoid altogether, for me, it's like, have I read some of them? Yes. Did I enjoy what I read? Yes. But in general, I'm not reading horror comics because I'm not a horror person kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm just not doing that. It's not that I, you know, I'm not passing judgment on them. It's just not my thing. And if it's for other people, fine, great, whatever. But those are the things that I would avoid. So are there any comics in the past or currently that you wish you had not read them? So like you get finished reading a comic and you're like, why did I waste the last 20 minutes of my life reading this thing?
Oh man, there were sort of certain things over the years where I didn't sort of have any experience with them, but they always looked quite cool. I always thought like the idea of like Spider-Man 2099 looked cool, that sort of era. I love that costume, but I hadn't sort of really ever read anything with that. And then when I had dropped the Nick Spencer Spider-Man run by that point, but I sort of heard that they were going to bring 2099 into it. I was like, oh, okay, so that sounds neat. So like I'll try again. The first couple of issues or so were fun. But then by the end, it sort of like deviated away from like, to something else, and it was just. I was like, okay, no, that was not a good idea.
Yeah.
It was. Yeah, there's definitely like a couple of times that was like, yeah, I feel like it's quite rare. I tend to lots of people around me say I've said that I'm sort of quite positive, and I tend to. Enjoy a lot of what I read, so when I don't sort of like something, which just happens off a few times, then it's sort of like I really didn't like it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the same, you know, I mean, that's the, I think that's the same thing with everybody. Like, for me, like,
yeah.
Do I like Radiant Black overall? Yes. Are there things that I absolutely love in that series? Yes. Are there things in that series that are not, I just don't really care for? Yes. But overall, Radiant Black is a comic book series that I enjoy for the most part. So I'm not going to go out and try to find something that I like is going to make me feel like, well, I wasted my time. I shouldn't.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, and of course for me, Radiant Black, please, please. She's just the godmother. Leave Kathy out of the story. God damn it.
Oh God. Yeah.
So
you spend enough time in the Radiant Black Discord and suddenly Kathy this and Kathy that.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Oh man.
I'm gonna start posting pictures of my, because my mom's name was Kathy and she passed away 7 years ago. So it's like when I read that I was like, oh, okay, she's just the, you know, overprotective godmother. Oh my God, what happened? What happened? And then everybody, and I blame Matt. I blame Matt more than I blame Bash, but Matt's like, oh, she could be this ultra cool alternative. Maybe she's the robot's, you know, human form. I'm like, oh my God, you guys are breaking my brain with these hallucinate. Like, I know we still don't know what that book is yet, but come on.
If it's out, blame Matt.
Absolutely. Every time. Yeah. All right. So everybody is safe. You, your parents, if you have siblings or whatever, everybody's safe. But the house is on fire. What is the one comic book you could never live without ever?
See, I think it would have to be that Justice League number one.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are, of course, like a few other things that could potentially be like replaced if you like if you had the money or whatever. But and yeah. Like so, like I could definitely just get another one because it's only like what 4 or 5 years old. Mm-hmm. So it's not exactly rare, but it was just something so special about it. And because also the when it came out, I hadn't. It was like so early on that I hadn't actually set up a pull list yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I just sort of knew what I wanted as I went in. I just sort of like looked around for them, and then I couldn't see any anywhere. But I had a Justice League shirt on, and he was like, "Oh, did you know there's a new number one coming out?" I was like, "Oh yeah, I'm just looking for it." And then he pointed me to one. It was like one of the only ones left.
Oh jeez. And so
it's just sort of quite a cool. Yeah, it's like sentimental value, isn't it? That you have.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. What was the most money you spent on a comic book or a comic item? Comic item could be a prop, replica, a statue, an art print, that kind of stuff.
There was, of course, the omnibus aren't exactly cheap. Almost wrong way around there. But it has to be the Something is Killing the Children number one. That it was, I sort of like got into the series. I bought the first trade and I just sort of devoured it basically, and I just sort of jumped straight onto the single issues, and then I was sort of like, I got to a point where I was sort of keeping an eye on number ones on eBay,
mm-hmm.
sort of like keeping an eye on them. I was like, well, it's like I don't actually like I can't really justify it then, and of course it was sometime in like May, must have been like last year, when of course like. Tanyan puts out some like news or something, or teases something on his newsletter, or there's like movie news or whatever, and it like doubles in price, and it's like, and then there was I say cheap, but it was like relatively cheap right now. There was a couple of auctions. I thought, well, the auctions are going to go up a bit, and I thought it was like I did really want it, so I went for it. And you know, sometimes you can't always give in to that sort of FOMO for financial and other reasons, but. Sometimes it is nice just to get something that you really want like that.
Yeah. I think for me with that kind of stuff, it's more of like, and it's not even about spending the most money. It's just about getting like I said, a full color art print or something you know, for example, let's just say that this is, you know, like, Remind me, who's the? I can't believe I'm forgetting this. Who is the artist on Marcello? Marcello, there we go. Marcello, yes. Costa. If I had Marcello and Becca do an art print of all of the Radiance with me, like, you know, that would be cool. Or if it was that image from, I think it's issue 3 or whenever Radiant Black and Radiant Red are first fighting, where they're flying at each other. Like, if I had as an art print, you know, like, and that's the thing. It's like with the art prints, it's like, it's not really about how much money you spend on those. Mm. It's more about like, but like some of these statues and some of these other item things, they're not cheap. They're not like ungodly. They're not like multi-million dollar mansion expensive, but they're still not cheap either. So yeah, very cool. Very cool. Was there ever a moment when you were completely done with comics, you just walked away?
So, it's interesting because you sort of hear those stories going around quite a lot. And I don't know if it's because there's sort of some people, they sort of like have comics of like from like a very early childhood, and then eventually later on they sort of leave them. But I thought, with me, because I feel like I got into them quite late, but of course it's been quite a while now, so it was earlier than I tend to think, but there was never sort of, I've only just sort of, like, expanded, like, gone further and upwards and expanded my, I mean, there might be a time in the future where I need to sort of take a break or take a step back, but for the moment, there's, like, nothing like that in the future that I can hopefully see.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's just one of those things where if it's like, why would you do, like, that's the thing. Like, when you walk away from something or when you stop doing something, it's because you're either not enjoying it anymore or you've moved on to something else. Like, I was never a comic kid. I was a cartoon kid. I was watching cartoons in the 80s at 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years old. And now, you know, because of my love of the Joker, no, I shouldn't say my love of, but people are like, oh, you love it, whatever. But what brought me into this and how we are, you know, we're 2.5, 3 months away from 10 years of this podcast. And what brought me in was New 52 Batman 13, that cover with his face. And I'm like, ooh, what's this? And the next thing I know, the next 10 years of my life flashes before my eyes. And here we are in episode, you know, 505 and 506 and 5. I don't know what we're doing this year, folks. I have and have not made a plan yet. All right. What are you reading right now? And what do you think our listeners should check out?
So, recently, first of all, in terms of like collected editions and things, I've been starting the Walking Dead first compendium of that. And that's not like an absolute classic. If you haven't read that already, there's over the sort of past year or so, I read a lot of the classics that people sort of tend to throw around, like Invincible and, you know, Saga, the first book of Sandman, those sorts of classics. Of like, yes, I can, as someone that's read them recently, I can affirm that they are as like classic and worth defining of that status as people believe them to be. Things like Batman, Superman, World's Finest, Something is King of the Children, those sort of like series you sort of get thrown around a lot that, again, are as good as people say they are. There was one recently, Little Monsters by Jeff Lemire and Dustin Nguyen. That's it. I almost said Justin. That's not right. I still need to read Descender, but
yes, I've had Descender in my Comixology wish list. Since whenever the hell the trade started coming out years ago. I think I did. So back for when we started and we got to 100 episodes of the show, episode 100, I did this thing called new number ones, or number ones for 100 kind of thing. And we each picked a number one or whatever, and we all talked about it. And I think I picked the sender number one, and I liked the story. I thought it was cool, and I thought the number one was great. I just never went back to it. Mm. It was just one of those things that was not tops on my list. But again, like I've been saying throughout this entire episode, folks, I have and have not made a plan for 2023 for the podcast yet. So you may be seeing and hearing things on this show that I've been planning since 10 years ago.
I mean, just looking at some of my polls here, mm-hmm. if you enjoyed The Art on Deadly Class, Wes Craig has got his own sort of solo image series going on at the moment, Kea. That's a couple issues in as of now, and that's been really fun. I'm excited to see where that goes. And things like Love Everlasting, from sort of like an all-star creative team on that, that's been super interesting.
Mm-hmm.
On the more superhero side, things like Nightwing, just a fun read. Strange Academy, that's something that's super fun from Marvel, that's a bit different but still within the Marvel universe that people should be reading, I think, or giving a try at least.
Yeah.
Or sort of like new characters there that it's got a very like wholesome vibe to it, but it's also like not afraid to be like dramatic and sort of intense at times. But like sort of like intense and like a sort of like kid friendly. It's sort of it's not necessarily like a kid's comic, but it's like suitable for kids, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's not as bright and shiny as some Scholastic books, but it's not as dark as Frank Miller. It's somewhere in between that. Yeah. Very cool.
The new, again, as of recording, the new Fantastic Four issue one came out the other week. That'll be a few issues in by the time this goes out, but that was fun, so I'm excited to see where that goes. I think, finally, I have to mention Lovesick by Noir Novicio. A year ago, as this goes out, she did the art on Bolero of Wyatt Kennedy, and that was super interesting. Again, lots of Image comics, but her art is absolutely gorgeous. And Lovesick, it's a very interesting concept, and if you sort of know what it's about or look up what it's about, then you'll sort of immediately see what I mean, because it won't be for everyone, but I think it's, I mean, there's only one issue out so far, again, as this has been recording, but I'm very intrigued to see where it's going to go, because it's slightly off-putting, but almost in a good way, so we'll see.
It's called Lovesick?
Yes.
Okay.
All one word.
Very cool, very cool. Heroes, heroines, anti-heroes and heroines, or villains? What archetypes are your go-to character reads?
I think of course this might be for most people, but it sort of depends on the writing. If it's written well, then it could be really interesting. Of course, like, I know that lots of people love a good sort of hero story, or I always find something really interesting and compelling about like villains taking the lead. I've always wanted to read Forever Evil. I recently got, a couple of months ago, the Justice League omnibus that connects that storyline, so I'm very excited to read that through. With Year of the Villain, that was like a few years ago, again, with that Scott Snyder Justice League run, that was super interesting. I think it really depends. I think there's lots of interesting creative and story choices that can be taken, like, depending on those archetypes and playing with them. And
very cool, very cool. Yeah, it's one of those things. You haven't read Forever Evil? Man, I
know.
I almost want to tell you, don't do it. Only because of what the former person that worked at DC did to... I don't call him by his actual last name. His name is Dan DiDildo is what his name is. And every time he's like, oh, Nightwing must die. And I'm like, no, you must get fired. So sorry to spoil it for you, but.
No, I've heard about that. But also, I sort of came into comics during the Rick Grayson era. So if I can handle that, then
yeah,
I might be able to handle anything, hopefully.
Exactly. Boy. Do you have a "My Parents Got Rid of My Comics" story?
No, honestly, there's not much to say about that one. But
okay.
There were definitely, I saw a couple of times when I've sort of like sold stuff that my parents had got for me. There were a couple of things where it was like, "Oh, you're selling that." I was like, "Yeah." I was like, "Oh," and then I sort of understood. I was like, "Actually, that is maybe not the best idea in terms of like you can sort of see like just sort of when you try and get rid of any gift that someone gives you, you can see how that's a bit."
Yeah.
So, but yeah. Apart from that,
very cool. Very cool. What is one item from a comic book you'd love to have scaled up in the real world? So examples, obviously, a Green Lantern ring with battery or batarang, etc., etc.
I mean, yeah, the Green Lantern ring would, of course, be super interesting. There's just trying to think about what sort of options there are. There are definitely lots of like interesting artifacts and things like that, especially with, like the possibilities with like a Green Lantern ring. That would be fun. I don't know, really. I mean, I suppose some of the Flash's rogues guns might be interesting. Imagine having like the cold gun in real life,
be like a
flamethrower, but with like coldness. There's lots of interesting options.
Yes, there's a lot of dangerous options too.
Oh yes. Oh yes.
If you could create any comic storyline, what would you want to create and what characters would you want to create it with? So basically, whatever company, let's just say DC, gives you the keys to the kingdom, what would you create?
Well, so interestingly, it sort of goes back to the idea of, like, DC is great, but there are still, like, a few characters from Marvel that I would probably... It would probably be something with, like, the Young Avengers and Wiccan and Hulk thing. I'm not entirely sure what quite the story would be, but I think that would be like a fun thing to go with, and especially to, because I mean, and they don't have a lot of stories out there. They have like a few things here and there over the past sort of decade or two that they've been around, but I think there's to be sort of, especially because since Empire a couple of years ago, they were sort of like the new like Kings of Space, and apart from sort of, they appeared so briefly towards the end of Al Ewing's Guardians run, but apart from that, hasn't really sort of been utilised, so I'm sure there's lots of interesting and fun story potential with that would be quite fun to read or to take with or do, you know?
Yeah, very cool, very cool. So what is it about Radiant Black that got you hooked?
I think... with the first issue, it was one of those series when, as I sort of encountered this a couple of times since then, where the first issue isn't like, I mean, like it's well done, but it isn't like blow you away. But you can like see the potential there. You can see like it's something special. It's like, some people need to sort of be like, grabbed like instantly and like need to know like exactly where the story is going to go. As long as I'm sort of like I can sort of see the potential in the characters there, it was always something that was like, oh yeah, this could be something special. And especially within, I think it was like towards the end of the first issue, the solicit, I remember now, it was like, oh, like the Radiants don't belong to them, they belong to the gods and they'll want them back by any means necessary. And I'm sort of like, well, hang on, it's like, that's super interesting. And I think we might finally be getting back to that at the moment, hopefully. But I don't know. We don't even know. But yes. That was definitely something. It was like, I need to see the payoff of this.
Yeah, with Radiant Black, it's like I said earlier, it's a whole new ball game.
And oh, yeah.
The way that Kyle... story-wise has paced it out so far, the way that they've created it, it just keeps you coming back for more.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And especially how it's, and like as I mentioned earlier, it's being expanded with the different characters. There's like multiple different spin-offs now, and
yep, absolutely.
there's just so many different like avenues and like story threads for the story to take, and it's fascinating.
Yeah, it very much is. What is the one piece of advice you would give the comics fandom?
Oh boy. I think so. I'm part of the camp that thinks that some people take things too seriously sometimes. I'm not calling for like endless amounts of characters to be written like horribly out of character, like different characters and things, but
right.
I've enjoyed a lot of Tom King's work that I've read, and that's like one writer, just for example, that often gets criticized by some people for sort of not writing things sort of correctly, as people might say. And there are definitely times when that's sort of like a valid complaint, but I think sometimes there are things that just sort of a bit too strict, and like as long as it's a good story and it's not like actively offensive, and maybe sometimes there are sort of things where creators need to be called out, or there are things that need to be sort of brought to attention. But other times when, in a more general sense of like, I think I might have used this as an example on my own episodes. And like if Batman goes for like a hot dog or something, and someone's like, "Oh, Batman wouldn't eat hot dogs." It's like, well, it's like just chill.
You don't know. Like he's out there fighting crime and killing, you know, beating up jokers and putting penguins on. You don't know what Batman needs to eat in the middle of a fight.
Exactly. Exactly. Like it's like not in a way to like yeah, like not in like a condescending way or to like belittle fans' complaints sometimes, but there are sometimes where it is taken sort of very like literally and very, like I said, like the old like Batman's hot dog debacle, you know. I think there's definitely something to be sort of learnt, and yeah,
it's just everybody calm down, it's okay, we can, you know, we can all enjoy the comics, so we don't have to.
Especially, I remember sometimes in Big Two Comics, especially, there's been a couple of times when the monthly format has had an interesting. There's been an interesting tie between the monthly format and the reaction on comics Twitter. I remember a couple of months before Chip Zdarsky's Batman run started, somebody was sort of like half joking. It was like, oh, by the time his first issue comes out, people will start like hating on Chip Zdarsky. It'll be like the worst thing that, you know, like some people like, oh, he's never written anything good. And then like a month or so later, it like started happening. There were certain things in his issues, like an issue or two in, where some people were taking things on literally. It was like, well, hang on, it's like this isn't right. This isn't. And it turned out later that it was sort of like written like deliberately off in a couple of ways, in a way that sort of paid off in a character arc over the. Yeah. Issues where sometimes there are things which are like set up and then are paid off like 5, 3, 6, whatever months later. That sometimes it's definitely sort of like a balance between that. There are sometimes, again, some things that do need to be like criticized, or there are some like valid complaints that people can make sort of month to month, but then there are other times when there are some things where it's like they need to be sort of waited and seen. You can sort of like judge the full story arc once it's over, rather than trying to sort of judge something that may or may not be paid off, or like if it turns out something weird happens and there isn't an explanation for it by the end of the story arc, then I mean that's fine. You're allowed to be know about that. But if it's like paid off in like a reasonable way and it's explained, then it's more reasonable and more understandable.
Yeah, it's like, you know, be patient and figure it out, and just, you know, don't look. I'm 42 years old. I have a lot of life in me, and so far to this point, and I have at times, and I still do a lot of times, overreact to a lot of things. However, you shouldn't like immediately overreact. Like the overreaction should not like. Like, you know, you can have an, oh my God, like the whole, what was it? There was something recently in comics where it was like, oh my God, I can't believe they, that's so cool. It was one of those, that's so cool kind of moments. And like, have those, but don't, you know, if you want to be negative, fine. That's your thing, whatever. But don't just be negative to be negative. That's not it's not a good way to live, actually. But, and like everybody else says with this question is, you know, just calm down. Like some people, man, just don't, I don't know. But yeah, so we are going to go to a quick break. You're going to hear some ads and some other stuff. Joe's going to come back with me. We're going to promote his podcast and everything else he's doing. And then we'll close the show right after this. Let's see. Did I do that right? Where is that? Oh, that's over here. This is right here. Here we go. One hour, 10 minutes, 39 seconds edit. All right, we are back here inside the Pullbag. Joe, why do you love comics? Tell us about your podcast, sir.
So, now I run a podcast called Joe Talks Comics.
Mm-hmm.
I started it back in, October? It was one of those fun things when sometimes there are sort of things when you're sort of like, oh, like, wouldn't it be cool if I did this? And then you sort of like think about it for a second, and it was one of those, it was like, wait, no, actually, I could do this. This isn't just something that has to be an idea. I can actually go ahead and do this, especially with Anchor, which is what I use to host it, where it's literally like free. It's incredibly easy to use. So you can literally just start from scratch. And especially when it's been quite cool, the amount of people I've sort of met online and friends online from places like not only Twitter, but also the League of Comic Geeks community and like various Discords, the amount of people that I've sort of had and are going to have on there, that it's such a fun place to like talk to friends in a more long form way that you don't really get a chance to on other social medias where that happens in messages. And it's quite sort of like a personal thing, especially when I sort of talk to people about like some of their favorite comics and our favorite comics and the ones we enjoy and love. And it's just such like a fun, chill experience that I'm just so excited and glad to have done and to keep doing.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, that is awesome. Yeah. That's the thing, man. It's like, you know, it applies to everything in life. As long as long as you're enjoying what you're doing, then do it. You know, if you want to read comics and do a podcast about comics, if you're, you know, old and crotchety like me that has a 10-year-old podcast, and oh my God, my podcast is 10 years. Oh God, I'm so old. You know, that kind of, you know, whatever it is, comics, cartoons, action figures, toys, whatever, you know, movies, whatever it is, just have fun with it and just, you know, so there's that. All right, folks. Did you want to give out your Twitter handles or anything like that?
So on Twitter, it's just Joe Loves Comics, and same on Instagram. On Twitter for the podcast, it's Joe Talks Comics. I felt quite lucky that I managed to just get like a plain one that literally no other identifiers or anything needed. You can find the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and then of course just on Anchor if that's where you want to listen to it. So a few different avenues and things to find me and the podcast. And yeah, it's been good talking to you. I just want to thank you for having me on. It's been good.
Absolutely. It's been a blast. Yeah. The funny thing about the podcast name game is we're in 2023 now at this point, but 2022, it's like, oh, what am I going to call when we start? When I like originally, and I've told this story before, so the listeners know this, but originally this was going to be called The Pull List. Huh. And I had Googled that. I had looked at it. I had looked at Apple. I had looked. If it's on Apple, then you can't, like, you need to figure out another name, you know, that kind of thing. And I did all the research. And then my buddy, Michael Powers, Booth Ninja, you know, he said, oh, what about the pull bag? And that's kind of where, oh, that works. That's this, you know, I can say this, I can do that. And here we are almost 10 years later, over 500 episodes. Holy crap.
Wild. Yeah, it's definitely quite a fun sort of, like, I remember there was a point where I didn't really use Twitter for, like, myself. Like, I looked at things, but I didn't really sort of, like, have much of a personal presence on there. And then a couple of years ago when I sort of established, like, an actual, like, almost brand of, like, just, like, Joe Loves Comics, and then the way that sort of expanded into other things. And because I remember when I was coming up with the name, I was sort of like, well, I'm thinking of calling it Joe Talks Comics, but I don't know. It almost sounds like two on the nose, but then no, actually that's fine, because you just, like, why not?
Yeah, like I said, it's all about the research. And, you know, if you come up with a cool idea, you just have to make sure that cool idea hasn't been taken. Because when we started back in 2007, 2008, 2009, like, it was, podcasting was there. It wasn't old, but it wasn't, like, brand new either. It was still in its infancy. And here we are, you know, 14, 15 years later, and it's like, I hate to use the old adage, but you get a podcast and you get a podcast. Everybody gets a damn podcast, you know.
Yes. Yeah. Everyone can have their own podcast.
And that's fine. I'm not sitting here trying to discourage, you know, I say that as a joke, because I'm not sitting here trying to discourage somebody. Oh, yeah. If you have an idea for a podcast that you think is going to be fun and interesting and you want people to listen to, go ahead and do it and see, you know, the only way you're going to find out to see what works for you and whatever else is if you throw that spaghetti at the wall. So I have no idea what's coming up in episode 506, folks. I have no plan at this point. I'm still working on the plan. Thank you for joining us here inside the Pullbag. If you'd like to get in contact with us, leave feedback for the show, there are several ways to do so. Visit the website geekcastradio.com, where you can listen to and comment on all of our content. Send email to feedback@geekcastradio.com. Here are all the ways you can listen to us nowadays. Apple and Google Podcasts, leave us reviews, please. Yes, even though Apple is essentially buried, it iTunes is still a thing, folks. Spotify and any other podcatching client you choose to use. Follow us on Twitter @GeekcastRadio for the network, @ThePullbag for the show. I am @TFG1Mike. Become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/GeekcastRadioNetwork. And you can also check out the Pullbag over there as well. I think I still have the link to the Radiant Black Discord in the posts. So if you head on over to the website into the Pullbag episode 505 post, you can join the Radiant Black Discord. They have a lot of fun over there, and it's super awesome and very welcoming community. So check that out as well. That was the other thing, listening to Bash and Matt. I was like, every time they mention the Discord, I'm like, okay, take a drink. Oh, wait, I'm going to be a lush by the end of the second episode.
Oh, yeah, that's not a game you want to play.
No, not at all. So for now, I am TFG and Mike with
Joe Loves Comics.
Make your great escape into comics, and we will catch you next time here inside the Pullbag.
And stop shouting! I'm not deaf!
You've just heard the latest episode of The Pullbag, the GCRN's first comic review and discussion podcast. There are several ways to get in touch with us and leave feedback for the show. You can visit the website, geekcastradio.com, where you can comment on the episode and all of our different podcasts. You can rate and leave a review for the show on iTunes. Be sure to leave us feedback. Become a fan of us on Facebook, facebook.com/ThePullbag. Send us an email, feedback@geekcastradio.com. Follow us on Twitter @ThePullbag and @GeekcastRadio. So until next time, make your great escape into comics and unleash the geek in you.
Always brings a smile to my face. Wing freak. Terrorizes. Wait till they get a load of me.